Relationships rule. That's my motto. I'm Janice Porter, and I love to share the power of relationship marketing to help grow and impact business. I've grown my business by building and nurturing relationships, and I'd like to help you do the same. Welcome to the Relationships Rule podcast, where connection means everything. Hello, hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Relationships Rule. Today, I'm speaking with Erin Hendon, who has spent 30 years building one of Seattle's top real estate teams while carrying a quiet weight underneath the success. Today, he's a certified mindfulness instructor and best-selling author and has just released a book that reframes gratitude as something that you train rather than something that you wait for. That kind of fascinates me. We're going to talk about what happens when high performers stop hustling their way through life and start actually showing up for it, and what that shift means for how we build relationships in business. So with that, welcome to the show, Erin.
Janice, thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited about this.
You're very welcome. So I wanted to start right in with, like, I'm picturing someone who in your past life, we'll call it, when you were really full on into your real estate career, that you had it all figured out on paper, you're closing deals, you're running a team, you're hitting every number. And underneath all of that, there's constant hum of anxiety that no one ever talked about.
Yeah. I think that's really standard. You know, the more I work with people and performers, that's the standard. And, you know, we call it hustle culture.
Yes.
You know, that's just, it's the common phrasing for it. And it really is that, and in a lot of ways, let's, you know, if I tell the truth, hustle and grinding it out produces results. It absolutely produces results. And in the beginning of any process, you know, there's a lot of grinding required. It's, I don't have a problem with it. It's just, there's a ceiling to it, and it feeds, it doesn't just, it feeds anxiety. It feeds that sort of gnawing. I need more, you know.
You know, it's funny because it makes me think of, in a way, I don't know if I ever had it the same way. Maybe I did, but you know, when I see my little granddaughter, who has this brain that never turns off, and I can feel her constantly, you know, her little heart never stops beating so fast, and she's always on to the next thing, that we do this in business, this hustle thing, because it feeds us something. It's exciting and whatever, but we don't realize the damage it might be doing.
Yeah, and I don't know that we do it because it's exciting. We do it because we don't train our brains for calm, for being centered. I'm going to say it's lazy, but I don't mean it in a shameful way.
Know any better.
Yeah, it's a little bit like eating Doritos, because you like Doritos and they're around, and then you keep buying them and they're around, and you know you shouldn't eat them, but they're around. And so I'm just going to keep eating. And you don't have any you just don't have any agency in the matter. And we don't train ourselves for agency is the thing.
This is true.
For me.
So what was the thing or the moment, or when did things actually shift for you?
Yeah. I was at a retreat with my wife.
Okay.
Who I love. We married 28 years and she's my best friend, and great relationship. I have the relationship of my dreams, and I have two kids, and they both speak to each other and they speak to us, and they're great, you know, 20 and 23.
Okay.
And my business makes six figures at least every year, more than that, you know, every year gets better, better, better. So I'm like living the dream, you know, this is the dream for me. This is everything. I'm at this retreat in Napa. And all of a sudden I noticed something that was always there, but I hadn't, you know, when you notice, you know how, like when your in-laws are coming over, you see your house differently.
Yeah. That's funny.
You're like, oh, look at that. That's not actually, I got to repair that. I saw my life differently for a moment. Like, it was always there, but I hadn't really seen it. It was the Jaws music in the background. And I had this moment where I realized that the game I was playing in life that gave me the jazz music was get enough. Get enough. You know, if I had enough money, enough time, enough stuff, then I'd be happy. Then I wouldn't worry. If I got enough, I wouldn't worry.
Okay.
And in thinking about it, it was insane. It's an insane proposition. It's not even a game. It's not only a game you can't win. It's a game, you know, I have kids and I, God forbid something happens to them where I no longer have them to worry about. I mean, it's not even a game I want to win, you know? And I thought, okay, well, if that's the game I'm playing, because I am very clear for myself that you always win the game you're playing. If you want to know what game you're playing, look at the results you have, and that's the game you're playing. You always get the results of the game you're playing.
That sounds very much like a landmark thing, I have to
it
say.
Is a, it is. That's where I got it. But I find it to be very true.
Yes.
I don't, no one should believe anything I say. I mean, just check it out. But that's, and I got, all right, well, I have the results of getting, you know, that game. There's never enough. I have the results of that.
Right.
What's another game I could play? And I realized that part of the problem I had was I couldn't just rest my mind on things I was grateful for. I have all these things to be grateful for. I have this great life.
Yes.
Wife, kids, money, time. It's unbelievable. And I can't be satisfied with any of it. I can't be grateful for it, really. And I thought if I could, and I, the metaphor came up later, but it really works, is my brain is like a feral dog. It's an untrained dog. We go to lazy, back to lazy, but it's an untrained dog. And, you know, it chases every thought, every random thought down to its cataclysmic conclusion and everything. Barking at the mailman, barking at ghosts. And I thought I could train my brain. I could train my attention. I could train where I rest my attention. That's what meditation does. And I knew that because I had meditated, you know, learned to meditate in my 20s and stopped for a while, stopped for a long time, but thought, okay, that's what meditation is. Let me go back to that. And I started meditating again and I loved it. And it was just this huge opening for me. And I decided to get trained as a meditation instructor so I could train my team, my sales team in it. And I did. And two things happened. One is I stopped worrying. Like it went away. Like the weight on my chest, the jazz music just stopped.
Because thought, you had this new practice? Or because
because I could train my attention. My attention was no longer a barking dog, just barking at every squirrel. Everything that came by, it just wasn't looking. It was no longer simply looking for problems.
Interesting.
And it could just rest on the way it is in this moment. You know, the way my feet feel on the floor. And then I put together a training and I trained my team in it. And we increased, we more than doubled our sales. It's 160%. And
so what did you see in them that made that shift?
Well, they got calmer. They could listen. They got less worried. You know, when I train salespeople in this now, which I do, every salesperson will tell you that people buy from people they know, like, and trust. And if you don't need them to do something, like, I don't need you to buy from me, I can be here for what you need. That's trustworthy. And in real estate, this is the most expensive, least performed, most complex, most emotionally impactful transaction of their life. This is a upsetting, you know, discombobulating transaction. So if I can be grounded, if I don't need anything from you, Janice, and I can just be here to listen and be a space, grounded, you're going to trust me more. They stopped chasing and started attracting. And every time I train a salesperson, this happens. They don't necessarily all double their sales, but it's really reliable that they increase their performance while lowering their stress, while lowering their worry.
Did you have a lot of resistance when you started training the first, your sales team?
I had a lot of resistance to myself when I started training. You know, there's only resistance. That's that, you know, the brain resists any kind of training in the beginning. And yes, so I resisted. And then when I, we'll talk about how you get through resistance, but then I, you know, and then, yeah, there's a whole level at which, you know, it, people hear it as woo-woo. So there's
Well,
that kind of
especially real
resistance.
estate salespeople, I gotta
Just
say.
any salespeople. Any
Salespeople,
salespeople.
they know everything anyway.
Right. They already know everything. And there's a whole, there's a contingent of real estate for sure that are woo, law of attraction, that space, which they're already that way, which is great. I am both in both camps. I am that woo is science and science is like the, there's a great book called No Mind, No Problem. It's the how neuropsychology is catching up to Buddhism.
Interesting.
And it describes the phenomena. So, you know, there's this world. I can stand in either world, science or woo about it. And yeah, and anyone who, you know, didn't want to participate didn't have to. You couldn't, you can't force people to.
So
But
you talk about the brain science then.
yeah.
So what's actually happening in someone's brain when they build a real mindfulness practice?
You grow your prefrontal cortex. You grow the part of your brain that's responsible for rational reasoning thinking. You increase the neural pathways in your prefrontal cortex. And you decrease the activity in your amygdala. Your fight, flight, or freeze mechanism becomes less active. So you're like you're, and it's funny that you, that it's a great question. And it's, that's the answer. And people still have, you know, you don't question if you lift weights, will your muscles grow?
And they lie about that too, but
And or if you do cardio, will you increase your cardiovascular health? Or if you change your diet, will you change your physiology? No one questions those things. No one's like, oh, I don't know if diet and exercise really do change the body. No one's got an argument about that. But, and no one who meditates would argue with me about what I just said about it growing your brain in that way. But people who haven't tried meditation or succeeded at have successfully meditated question that. And it is as physical of a change in the brain. It's measurable by MRIs. It's measured now. It is not woo-woo. That is, you're actually changing your brain's capacity to reason under pressure.
I mean, I tried. I remember years ago going to a meditation class, and it was somebody that I knew that was doing it. And I went, I guess, a series of classes, but I never continued. And I think I always, I don't know, as if I resisted openly, or whether, I was telling myself all the wrong stories. I don't have time for this. This isn't doing anything for me, blah, blah, blah. And you talk about, I think I read that you don't have to do it for a long time. Start small, and don't worry about what comes up in your brain. Just let it come
That's right.
up and let it go away, right? Let it just,
That's right.
okay.
It, so there's a bunch of misconceptions about meditation, and so I don't have time is always the first, but you don't have time for anything. Okay, that's always the first thing that comes up. And I called and checked with Instagram, and they will not kick you off the platform if you take 10 minutes away from scrolling. So you have the 10, you have the 10 minutes. Okay. And 10 minutes a day, and I am serious about this, 10 minutes a day is sufficient that in 6 to 8 weeks, those results that I just talked about happen.
And does it matter when or the
No,
setup for it?
no, no, no. In fact, people say, do you, should I meditate every morning? And my answer is always only if that works for you. Like I have a, I live on an island and you got a ferry commute off. And it's a 20-minute drive. It's a 20-minute boat ride, and that would be a great time to do it. If you are, if you already commute on public transport, great. Do it that. Do it any time. Do it before you leave the car and go back into the house. It does not matter. So that's one. So yeah, you don't have to have a. If having a schedule works for you, bueno, do it. But don't pretend I missed it this morning, so I can't do it.
So, and that's really it. You don't have to have the perfect ideal setup for it.
No, you don't. You don't need to. So that's okay. So then we get down to really, even before we get to the 10 minutes, you got to get to what people think meditation is. Okay. And when you say meditate, or you text someone, "I started meditating," your phone is going to give you a choice to do a little cross-legged figure as the emoji.
The lotus
Because people
position.
think meditation is sitting cross-legged on a cushion with incense for an hour with an empty mind. When I say meditation, that's what you think. Okay, that's not what, that's a kind, but here's a meditation you could do. And anyone could do this. Do you drink coffee or tea in the morning?
T.
Tea. So you can sit with your cup of tea in a quiet spot and look at your cup of tea and feel the warmth in your hand and notice the, maybe a little leaf got loose. Notice the bag and maybe there's some color to the top and it feels this way in your hand. And then notice what your hands feel like as it lifts and notice the temperature as it gets to your lips and how hot it is and sweet it is and the flavor on your tongue before you swallow. And you put it down and you notice the steam and the light in the steam and the top and you feel it now. And you drink your cup of tea just like that. That will produce the same results as sitting with your eyes closed meditating.
So what I hear from that and kind of like is that if you just talk of it as mindfulness, being aware of
Yes.
what's around you and what you're doing, it doesn't feel as,
Onerous.
as onerous, right?
Yeah. There's a difference between mindfulness and meditation. And that is a very intensive mindfulness practice, doing 10 minutes, and it's closer to meditation. But I always look at it like this. Mindfulness is how we live our life. Meditation is like going to the gym. You don't go to the gym to get good at lifting round iron heavy things, unless you're an Olympic weightlifter. You go to the gym to get to lift heavy iron things so that you can lift your grandkid when you're 85. You don't go to the gym to get good at going to the gym. And you don't meditate to get good at meditating. You meditate so you can live mindfully.
Oh, that's nice. I like that.
Okay. And all meditation is, all is, it is a set period of time where you are training your attention to rest where you put it. So the metaphor, back to the dog metaphor, because this really works for people. And this then gets down, there's two other problem, things that people have around meditation. And one of them will get answered in this. If you ever train a puppy,
No,
okay, you train
but
a
my daughter
puppy,
has, so I
okay, you
understand the
crate
concept.
train a puppy by putting it in the crate. And then it wanders out of the crate and you pick it up and you put it back in the crate. And then it wanders out of the crate and you put it back in the crate. And you're friendly with it and you don't yell at the puppy for getting out of the crate. In fact, if the puppy doesn't try to get out of the crate, you can't train it to stay in the crate. You can't train a dog that doesn't bark not to bark. You got to catch it when it's barking. And then you put it back in the crate and you do that for enough time. And then eventually you wind up with a well-trained dog, a happier dog, and a dog that's your best friend. And I don't know people that think their brain is their best friend because you don't have a trained brain. You have a feral squirrel. You have a brain that will chase every ding and every buzz and everything now is geared to capture your attention. Google spent $200 million on determining what shade of 42 shades of blue would increase the clickability of that button.
Scary.
You and I are part of a testing phenomena where our ability to choose for ourselves is tested in every single way possible. If you can, so back to the dog, if you can train your brain to rest its awareness on something, say your breath or your cup of tea, and every time your mind wants, so you'll take a breath in. And before you take a breath out, you're making a list. Puppy's out of the crate. Put your attention back on your breath. And you take another breath in. And then before you breathe the breath out, you're finishing that argument with that guy on the internet 3 weeks ago. I can't believe they said that. I mean, oh, I know what they should have said. I know. And now you're 4 minutes and you catch yourself. Okay, put the puppy back in the box, back to the breath. And you do that for 10 minutes. The mind wandering is not the problem. There is no time in your meditation history where you will ever get to a non-wandering mind. That is not a thing.
Okay.
There is no empty mind. The Dalai Lama does not have an empty mind when he meditates.
Okay.
There is no such thing. So people say, my mind wanders too much. No, that's like saying my puppy keeps barking at the mailman. No, that's the training ground. That's where you get trained to rest your attention where you put it, not where it goes by itself. Because the default mode network, what neuroscientists call the resting state of the brain when you're not actively engaged in something, and it's just whatever you're not actively engaging it, it will engage itself in narration and storytelling about the situation. And given the brain's job is to keep you safe, it's looking for threats. And failing to find any threats, because there's very few tigers in bushes anymore, but there are emails, it will find a threat and make up a story about it. And that's what you call you, but that's not you. You're the one listening to it. And if you meditate, you can watch yourself listen to it. There becomes a you and an it.
Oh
There
my.
becomes a you and the thoughts it's having. And you can watch it like stepping behind a waterfall and seeing the water come in front of you. The water's never going to stop. The thoughts are never going to stop.
So you
But
don't
you
have to try and solve anything or change anything.
nothing,
Just you.
nothing.
Yeah.
No. In fact, anytime you're trying to solve it, that's you not being on the breath. Just come back.
Right,
Even
right.
those times where you think, oh, that meditation was so good. Okay, we'll come back to the breath. There's no good or bad meditation.
Right.
There's no,
Interesting. So,
there's just noticing.
yeah, okay. So let's talk about your book, your new book, which I think will have launched by the time this episode launches in a few weeks. It's called How to Live a Grateful Life in an Effed Up World. And unfortunately, I can't have the power of that word in this podcast,
There
but
you go.
I think my audience gets the idea
There
how
we go.
to live a grateful life in an effed up world. And it's built around a framework that you call the five A's. And I wanted to know
Yes.
if you would share those with us.
Sure. So just to go back to the name for a second, okay?
Sure.
It's I called it that because it's sort of as a I don't know, a position, I guess, or a stance to juxtapose it to toxic positivity, to all the just good vibes stuff that's out. You know, like there's very little room for us to acknowledge things that aren't working. You know, then you're negative. And then
Yes.
you're, what? No, it's all good. No, just be grateful. Make a list of things you're grateful for, but you don't have any way to hold all the unworkability. And the world is pretty messed up. There's a lot of unworkability. And every day seems to be saying, hold my beer to yesterday's unworkability. Watch this.
Yeah.
So if you don't have a way to hold that, you never really get the gratitude happens occasionally. You know, you hold your grandson, right? You see a little puppy, you have a great glass of wine, you look in the eyes of your loved one. Gratitude happens. But how do we get access to it when things are messed up?
Okay.
That's the question I wanted to get to.
Okay.
And the five A's will do that.
Okay.
So
Perfect.
the five A's are awareness, allowance, acceptance, appreciation, and then attitude of gratitude, or just attitude. So awareness, that's the what's my cup of tea feel like in my hand? What's my breath feel like as it rises and falls on my chest? And what do my feet feel like on the floor? Awareness, just aware, non-judgmental awareness. Notice it
That
without
feels
judgment.
like that feels, sorry to interrupt you.
No,
That
no.
feels like the Eckhart Tolle.
Very much so.
Yeah, okay.
Very much so.
Okay.
Just What is this moment like? I have this tension in my chest. I have a headache. I have this pain in my between my eyes, a lump in my throat. I experience joy. Whatever. All of it. All of it. Any of it. Just being aware and developing the capacity to just simply be aware of the moment in the moment, period. That's fundamental. That's the first step. That's breath awareness 101. This is what the air feels like in my chest. This is what the air feels like in my nostrils. 10 minutes a day, awareness, just developing the muscle for awareness. Then there's allowance. This feels this way in my chest. The upset that I experienced when my spouse said this. I'm no longer fighting with reality. I'm not no longer saying it shouldn't be this way. It's raining. It's raining. A 5-year-old has this relationship to it's raining, right? When they don't get to go to the beach, right? I remember big problem I had not going to the beach one day with my family when it was raining. A child fights reality that way. Totally normal. You, fully functioning adult, a little bit weird when you think about it like that, that you don't have it be, look, the political situation's the political situation, and the people treat people this way, and AI is what, all of it. It is how it is. We don't, allowance isn't the same thing as agreement. It's not the same thing as choosing. It's not the same thing. This is the way I like it. You're not saying I like it. You're just saying I'm no longer fighting reality. It is this way. And you can't change anything that you don't allow.
And that's not necessarily accepting it.
Accepting it is different. Accepting it is the next step. So the way I distinguish the difference between allowance and acceptance is if you brought a shirt to the dry cleaner, they would could allow you into the building, but if they didn't accept the shirt, it wouldn't be getting clean. They have to accept it. You need to accept it next. So you've allowed it. It exists the way it exists. My wife exists the way she exists. Then this is, inside relationships rule. How much of the unworkability in relationships is from you resisting the
The other
way
person.
someone is
Yes, I get it.
not the way I heard them. No, this is the way they are. Okay, we'll get to that too, right? But that's awareness is, wait a minute, they're not that way. I heard that. That's what I heard, right? So I'm allowing that to, I'm allowing myself to be, allowing the judgment to be my judgment. It's not who I am, but there's a judgment here, and I notice that. I'm aware of that. I allow that. And then I accept it. This is happening in my life. Where is this happening in my life? This is happening in my life. Not acquiescence. It's not surrender. It's not resignation. It's simply saying, this is happening and it's happening in my life. And I have something to say about it. May not have anything to say about the rain, but I have everything to say about how I interact with the rain.
It's not what it is, it's how we choose to deal with it.
That's right. I accept that I have some say about this. And those are by far the three in the book and in the live cohorts that I teach that the book was an outcome of in How to Live a Grateful Life. We don't even get to gratitude till week 7. We'd send 6 weeks because this is where the just good vibes crowd misses the boat. There's no conversation for developing the capacity to be with things the way they are. There's just some hope that my writing, my car, my wife, my dog, that I'm grateful for over and over and over in a book, is somehow going to overtake me when the deal falls through. But the deal fell through. I'm not getting that money. That person's not getting that house. That's what's happening right now. If I don't accept that, I have no power in the situation. I could only be at the effect of the situation, and no gratitude could be possible for me there. But once I've practiced and trained my brain in allowance, awareness, allowance, and acceptance, I can then authentically begin to look at the situation and say, okay. And you don't want to rush to this. You can't skip steps, and you can't move on until the experience is real for you. And you'll know when it's real for you because you know when things are real for you. Doesn't mean it doesn't slip. It doesn't mean you don't need, but you will then be able to authentically ask, hey, is there something here I can appreciate? I can appreciate my own courage for sitting through it. I can appreciate that I got that business in the first place. I can appreciate a lot. Go ahead.
Sorry, I was just thinking, so in that sort of situation, I mean, you have it's not all about you. It's about you being that person to step your client through it, for example,
Completely. And I
right?
can't step them through it if I'm reactivated.
Yeah,
They're
okay.
paying me to be
Yeah.
their guide.
Yeah.
If I'm lost, if I am not in acceptance, if I haven't gotten at least to acceptance,
Yeah.
I have no shot.
Yeah, because now you have to think fast and you have to say, okay, this is the way it is. What's next? How do
And
you
I
deal with
and
that?
so the more I practice that, the more
Yeah.
trustworthy I become because I'm the guiding rock here. I'm the person that can be with their upset. I don't coach them to accept it.
No.
But I mean, at some point I will, but only after they allow it to be the way it is. Then you can begin to ask, hey, what can I appreciate about this? And there's a list of things you could rest your awareness on that you appreciate about it. And then from there, now you've eliminated all the resistance. Okay, you are aware, allow, accept. You've begun to consider what can I appreciate. And inside that, like when you let go of a cork you've been holding underwater, it just pops up. Gratitude just pops up. And I define gratitude as appreciating something as a gift. When you appreciate something as a gift, that experience is what we call gratitude. So not only do I appreciate it, but I appreciate it as a gift to me. So you can appreciate things, but if you don't consider it a gift, you'd miss the experience of gratitude. And when you start to tap into this, it's all a miracle. I mean, this struck me 23 years ago when my daughter was born, but I don't think there's anyone who's ever seen a human being born that wasn't in the presence of a miracle.
Yeah, right.
I don't think anyone looks at a woman giving birth and thinks, oh, that's not a miracle.
Yeah.
That's a miracle. And I don't think it's question. I don't, like I said, I just don't think that's questionable. And if that's a miracle, the single most common phenomenon in a living being's life, being born. You haven't met anyone who wasn't born.
Okay, I don't want to get too esoteric here, though.
Okay, good.
Okay,
But my
yeah.
point is, there's just you could wind up being grateful for a lot.
Right. It's funny. I watched this silly thing today when I was having my tea instead of looking at the tea in my cup
Right.
on Instagram. And it was somebody said that she tried to repost this or something, and Instagram wouldn't let her, but somehow she managed to or post to get it up there. And it was a video of somebody, I guess they were in a car, and as they were slowly going by people on the sidewalk that were walking in a busy street, this woman was reaching out and saying, "Hey, I love your coat today," or "You've got such a great sun," right? And she was showing appreciation for people and doing the cool stuff, and how it lit people up. You could just see
Yes,
their faces.
empowering catcalling, empowered
It
catcalling. I've seen
yes.
it. It's
Okay.
good.
Yeah, but it was kind of it kind of really reminded me that you can go through life or go through your day and never appreciate, never show the gratitude to other people.
Okay.
And that not only makes their day, but it kind of makes yours too.
Well, and now let's just go back to relationships rule. Tell me a relationship you have where you're being in the presence of the gift that that person is to you. Is it there's a downside to that? Tell me where there's a downside to that. Tell me where that's not going to empower the relationship, where you can get yourself in the space of even this angry client, even this person who's really upset, that you can't sort yourself out, train your puppy well enough to get, my gosh, there is a human being over there.
Well, there are times when I'm not seeing, I'm being really honest here, when I'm not seeing that gratitude, the
Plenty
positive,
of times.
right? I'm seeing the thing
Yeah.
that's frustrating me right now or that's
Yes.
making me angry. And what does that serve?
It's
Who does
this
it
is
serve? Nobody.
it's nobody, nothing. It's your default mode network. It's your brain
Yeah.
doing its job, protecting you. And it's on one hand, I mean, it's on one hand, great. It's doing its job. It's protecting you from upset, from disappointment, from rejection, all the fear of phoning, all the stuff that, I won't ask her out. I don't want to, I'm scared, all that stuff. It's designed to justify you're not acting in a way that's threatening. It's doing its job. And like we said, it's a little bit lazy on our part to not have trained our brain in the first place to be able to distinguish between a real threat and a made-up one. And to be able to, so the way I've got this sort of wired for myself now is, if you develop an agency of attention, like I can rest my attention where I say I want it.
Okay.
I can rest it on what I'm great. I can find the space, right? Which, I get into plenty of fights with my wife where it's not that way, right? Just yesterday, I was like, oh man, did I feel disrespected? I was like, took me like 10 hours to get unhooked from it. Oh, I forgot where I was going with that. I just got rehooked by my wife thing. That was funny. Ram Dass used to say, if you think you're enlightened, go spend a week with your family. Like that's where your buttons are going to get pushed the most, but oh, where did I start that thought? I don't remember.
Well, we're talking about putting your attention where it needs to be.
Oh, right. If you can rest your attention, if you have agency of attention, you can fulfill your intentions.
Ooh,
See,
that's
everyone has agency of intention, right? You got a ton of intentions. You intend to weigh a particular amount. You intend to be great with your spouse. You intend to be present at dinner. And then you find yourself on your phone under the table texting about the meeting tomorrow. No problem with agency of intention. You have a sticky notes about it. Intentions are clear. But if you don't have agency of attention, you can't fulfill on it.
That just reminds me of when my daughter was little and we're standing in the kitchen, and I guess I'm trying to make dinner, and she asks me a question, and I'm busy focused on making dinner. And I think it was like from the mouths of babes kind of thing, where she said, or she wanted to tell me a story about something that happened at school. I think that's what it was. And she said, "Mom, I'll tell you when you're listening." Right?
Right.
Yeah, because it wasn't going to happen then, because my attention wasn't in the right place,
That's
actually.
right. It's great. And you have an intention to be wonderful with your daughter. No one's like, I have an intention to be shitty with them. Sorry, to be bad with them. But we don't have agency of attention. Even enough attention to say, hey, honey, I'm not listening now. I'm doing something else.
Yes,
Can
exactly.
we do, like that's everything. And your daughter's a great example too, because, and I cover this in the book, and this is one of the things that you can train yourself out of, is the myth of multitasking. We all think, but we all know when the other person on the other end of the phone is scrolling the internet.
There's no such thing really, and I always thought I was a multitasker, but it's really doing one thing right after the other.
It
It's not.
it's task switching is the way the brain works, and you lose 40% of your effectiveness. The science behind it is 40%.
So I feel like I have to wrap things up time-wise,
Okay.
but I do feel like there's so much more we could talk about. So I want to just ask you one thing. So if someone's in the middle of a genuinely difficult business
Yeah.
relationship, a difficult client, a deal falling apart, a partnership under strain, how does a mindfulness practice actually help in that moment rather than just after the fact?
It's a great question. And I would say it's in the answers in the common ground that the Navy SEALs and the Buddhists share. How's that,
Wow.
right?
Okay.
They both have the same orientation to, and they say, we don't rise to the occasion. We sink to the level of our preparation. So have you prepared? Meditation, mindfulness, practicing raises the floor that you will sink to during upsets.
That's good.
So if you're not, so the 10 minutes a day, do you know who James McCracken is? Admiral McCracken?
No.
He gave a TED, he gave a commencement speech
Okay.
at University of Texas at,
I may have heard it actually now that you're
yeah,
mentioning
about
it.
making your bed. The most, he was the Navy SEAL commander in
But I'll
charge
look it
of the
up. Yeah.
Osama bin Laden. Yeah, it's a really multi-million views. But he talks about the most important thing a SEAL does is the most important lesson you learn is make your bed. Because at the end of the day, you can come home and see, I did that.
I'm one of those
Even
people. I have to
a
make my bed.
bad day, you come home to a made bed.
Yeah.
Meditation is making your bed.
Okay.
Even during a bad day, you come home and your bed is made. Your brain is, your attention is trainable, but you've got to start. And you, and the number one rule, okay, so here's how people can get into it, Janice. The number one rule is you can't do it wrong. You can't do it wrong. Just put the intention on it. Even if you forget and you remember one time during the day, oh, I should meditate, and then you don't do it. Even the moment that you thought of it, that's worth celebrating. You know, it's like learning how to walk, Janice. This is the last metaphor, and then we can wrap up. When you taught your daughter
Two.
how to walk, two daughters how to walk, this is how you did it. Every time she stood up, you cheered. If she fell, you cheered. If she fell forward, you yelled like she's walking. She fell forward and you were like, you're walking good. Yay. Every attempt was met with a celebration. No coaching, no corrective criticism, no anything. Never was there a moment where you thought, well, she's just not going to be a walker. Never a moment where you would have, had she had language, accepted from her, well, listen, mom, I like being carried. I'm not a walk. Never. There was never anything but celebration. Everything was met with, so I've yet to meet the adult that treats learning something new with 1/100th of that grace. Every attempt is worth celebrating. You take one mindful breath, you meditated. You drank half your tea. The mind wandering doesn't even count as a failure. The mind wandering and noticing your mind wandering is the success. I just mean the amount of time on task. Any amount of time on task is worth celebrating. You keep that orientation to it, you'll be able to break through whatever you couldn't break through the first time you tried to meditate.
It's inspiring. I do say that. It's inspiring. Before we go, just tell my audience where they're going to be able to find your book and name it again the way we
Yep,
have to do it
I
here.
understand.
And then where they can find you. Yes.
Great. All of it in the same place, aaronhendon.com. It's all
Okay.
there. They can find me, the courses I lead, the books, everything is available at aaronhendon.com. Links to my Substack, all to my blogs, everything,
Perfect.
aaronhendon.com. And the book is How to Live a Grateful Life in an Effed Up World.
Yes,
And it'll
fun.
be out sometime early August is what I have to now start saying. I was saying July for so long, but
Oh, it's hard, isn't it? I know.
we're at the 20th, right? So
That's okay. It'll happen when it's
it'll
meant to,
happen.
right?
Are we the 20th?
So, yeah,
Yeah.
21st today.
21st. Good. See? Later.
So, I think it's inspiring, Erin, to think of the fact that success and peace of mind are not automatically the same thing, and that the relationships that we build in business are only as strong as the presence we bring to them. Mm. And for me, it's all about relationships. So I think that it's important that I'm going to look at one thing you said. I highlighted one of the concepts in your book is gratitude is a strategic advantage.
Very much so.
Yeah. And I love that because I think that's, I mean, you know, I'm getting on, but I'm still learning things. And I love that. I love that there's still things that we can learn and that we can improve on and bring to the work that we do. So, yeah, I like that one a lot. I appreciate where you're coming from because I think that you're still so much, you know, you're helping other business people, other salespeople, see the value in this beautiful mindfulness practice and meditation that you teach. And I want to thank you for enlightening me and our audience. And I hope that my audience, I hope that you, that my listeners are going to, and watch and viewers are going to see the value in taking the time to sit with that and to sit with you know, what it can do for you.
Yeah. So great. Janice, I really appreciate the opportunity. It's been a pleasure and I look forward to our future endeavors.
Yeah, me too. Thank you so much. Thank you. To my audience, remember to check out Erin's new book and to check his website, erinhendon.com. And let's talk a little bit more about that in the future.
Great.
Stay connected and be remembered.
Thanks for joining us. If today's show inspired you to make a new connection, why not start with me? Head over to LinkedIn and connect with me. Be sure to let me know you are a podcast listener because I select one listener each month who connects with me on LinkedIn for a complimentary profile audit. And you know I love to meet new people, so I hope you take me up on it. Don't forget to stay connected and be remembered.